Who with it now? Welcome to the Pride of Detroit podcast, P-O-D-cast, for the people, by the people, prideofdetroit.com for your Detroit Lions. Not playing this weekend, though. Absolutely not playing at all. Just sitting back, kicking back, listening to a little Creedence Clearwater Revival per our Spotify playlist. And I don't know, what beverage are we enjoying over this bye week, Ryan? Ryan Matthews?
Oh.
Back as the rock god?
Yeah.
At Ryan underscore POD.
Let me know when you want me to talk.
Go ahead and talk.
I don't know. Arnold Palmer. It's always the beverage of choice when you don't want to, you know, get too hazy. It was a good time to just kick back and watch football this weekend.
Jeremy Reisman, fearless leader at Detroit on Lion. What's your beverage you're kicking back on here?
Well, first I want to say you called this the Detroit Lions podcast, but you forgot a very important adjective in front of it.
I said it's the Pride of Detroit podcast, the POD cast.
And then you forgot to say the first place Detroit Lions podcast.
The first place. All right. I like that. I like that. Without even lifting, that's some boss stuff right there. Without even lifting a finger. It's like, nope, it's like Michael Corleone, where, you know, Washington and Tennessee, they're like our soldiers and they're just shooting up guys while we're having like a baptism. I don't know why we're having a baptism, but this is the Godfather. You got to have that reference work right. I'm already not feeling myself. I'm Chris Lemieux at Detroit Southern. I've already talked too much without introducing our guests. That's right. We have guests on this podcast now. It's fantastic. And this guy, I don't even know how to introduce him. He from Bleacher Report, from Sirius XM, Vice Sports. He is all over the comeback. I forgot about that. He's all over. He's a Lions fan, and he's a big time national NFL writer. The Lion in Winter, Ty Schalter.
Thank you, Chris. Gosh, appreciate the nice intro there. Also, Pro Football Weekly and the Washington Post. Just gotta.
You're in the Washington Post now?
Yeah, I'm guesting at their fancy stats blog once every couple, 3 weeks so. I've got something going up there. But it's like the most obscure possible subset of the Washington Post. But I get to claim a WAPO byline, so.
You mean to say that the blog you're not writing for, like a high flying blog at the Washington Post, like The Fix with Chris Saliza?
Yeah, no, well, hey, I mean, fancy stats, though. Neil Greenberg does a great job there, and
no, I like yeah, the WAPO. Yeah. I really do.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Definitely. And I mean, hey, they're a national outlet trying to cover national stuff, so it's good on them for finding people and trying to push the envelope, even within the context of what's theoretically a local paper.
Do you ever talk with Dan Steinberg at all? Like, is he kind of, because I see him online all the time, and he seems to just be really trying to rile up the... the Skins fans in our lives.
Yeah, no, I haven't. I haven't. It's just, you know, and each of these little mini fiefdoms. But I got to sit in for Neil. He took a week off. So I got to handle his weekly fantasy column. Nice. And so I got to file directly to, like, you know, the big shot WAPO sports editors. So that was like, hey.
We're gonna be talking with Ty here about some national stuff, including a really big topic when it comes to the Detroit Lions, especially now as Jeremy makes me say the first place in the NFC North division leaders, Detroit Lions. But first, y'all, we need to talk about the bye week, because as I said, this is like we're like Al Pacino here in the first part of The Godfather, where it's like, you know, we're not doing anything. Our hands are clean and we just have, you know, the soldiers just rushing in and just, you know, taking out a guy while he's in the barber chair or something. And that's kind of what I feel would happen to the rest of the NFC North this week. Like, the Vikings got their, like, soul snatched by Washington, and then the Packers, they got a 40 put up on them.
By the Titans. The Titans of all teams. The offensive juggernaut that is the Titans.
I know you want to say something. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, there are a couple things here at play, because we've got the Titans, a team that, you know, edged out the Lions by a little bit. Some would say aided by the refs. I wouldn't necessarily say that. But You got them putting a 40 burger on the Packers, and you never really wanted to count the Packers out of that game because you were just waiting for Rodgers to kind of turn it around. He did it the week before and came up just short. Didn't really come too close this week. But I'm still nervous because all I can think about is the 2013 season right now. The Lions entered week 11, 6-3, first place in the NFC North. Then everything fell apart. And we know this Lions team that we have right now is very flawed on at least one side of the ball, and the offense has struggled against good defenses. So this isn't a typical division-leading team. So I'm walking on eggshells right now. I'm happy, but I'm tiptoeing on eggshells.
Ryan, are you tiptoeing around here, Ryan?
Yeah, I'm just Al Pacino in The Godfather, right? I'm just kind of like, no, hey, I mean, the Titans put 40, like we said, up on the Packers, and they did it all without Andre Johnson. And I don't know. I think, you know, Tennessee's a much better team than I think they get credit for. I think they might actually even be the best team in that division, even though, you know, the AFC South has, you know, the Texans sitting at the most egregious 6-3 that I've seen in quite some time. But
we also looked at their schedule moving forward for the Texans, and I think, like, we are of the mind they're going to take between 5 and or even maybe 6 losses.
Yeah, it's really all up in play, though. It's kind of, I guess, been the NFL this way this season. But yeah, I mean, let's not count out the fact that the Bears lost to the Bucks.
Yeah, the Bears got beat down pretty hard by Jameis Winston and his boys.
Right, so it was an entire week where the Lions got to sit back, hopefully get a little bit healthier, and, you know, they got to watch everybody else in their division lose. So, I mean, that's the best possible of all timelines, right?
I think so. I think I would have liked if, like, you know, maybe if the Panthers had lost, but I mean, no, the Panthers did lose. Panthers did lose. I would have liked if, like, the Cowboys had lost, maybe, or the Eagles had lost. Maybe in case to just keep a wild card in play. But I mean, at this point right now, man, I mean, it looks pretty good. Looks pretty good. Looking around, like, yeah, the wild card's probably very tightened up now, especially with Arizona sitting at 4-4. Giants might be going to 6-3. We're recording during Monday Night Football, so we'll know later. You'll know by the time this podcast comes out where they're at. But they stand around with Washington. But it's going to be some tight stuff. But I mean, hey, you're at the top of the division. All you can really hope is that this doesn't mean absolutely 90% certain now that the Jacksonville Jaguars will beat the Lions in week 11, which I'm sorry, Jeremy, what did that line open at? -6.5 for the Lions?
6.5, I think, for the line. Or yeah, Lions favored by 6.5, which is a larger deficit, essentially, than the Lions have ever put on another team this season. They've only won by 6. And that was in overtime. Whew. So, again, I'm walking on eggshells here. This team can win or lose against anybody. They lost against the Bears. They lost against, you know, there was another crappy team they lost to. I can't remember right now, but I just don't know. The six and three Texans.
How can you forget about the 6-3 Texans?
How about the Packers? They lose against the 4-5 Packers.
Yeah, I mean, I was joking around earlier in the day. Stafford's one Minnesota loss away from not having a home victory against a team with a winning record.
There's Mr. Pessimism. Right when we were counting on him to come out, there he is. So, like, Ty, like, what about from, like, your perspective from, like, the bye week? I mean, did you enjoy watching football this week? I mean, I think kind of like the sense around here is that we really enjoy the bye week because we get to sit back and just watch football. So, I mean, what about you?
Yeah, well, my routine definitely doesn't change. You know, I'm doing everything. So right now I'm live blogging for Vice this season. So it's like 3 or 4 pieces throughout the whole day. Plus I have my radio show in the morning, 9 to 11. So it's basically 12 to 13 hours straight of football working. So whether the Lions are playing or not. So it's not any different for me. Monday is really the night that I can kick back a little bit and actually watch some football because I don't have any live responsibilities this year on Monday night. So, but for me, you know, a lot of what you guys said for me, and I texted my wife this joke. And I was like, is this cool? And she's like, I don't know. And then I was DMing with another national writer who had tweeted about the Packers. And I was like, okay, like, should I do this joke? And he was like, ha, 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 yes, do it. And so I was like, okay, like, Wisconsin residents are finally ready to take a stand against McCarthyism. like the Packers, you know, against the Titans. And, you know, like you guys said, the Titans right now, they're finally opening it up. Marcus Mariota's throwing it. They're letting him throw deep. They're letting him throw often, and the points are starting to come on the board. No Andre Johnson, traded away Doriel Green Beckham, and they're just racking up points now. And Dick LeBeau has done a fantastic job with that defense. But this is still a team. The Packers, I mean, talent for talent, starters, depth on both sides of the ball. This should be that the Packers should be beating teams like these. And I was on a radio spot, and I was trying to explain, like, look, I'm looking at the numbers, and my brain says the Titans are going to win this game at home. But my experience as a scarred Lions fan tells me this is when Aaron Rodgers shows up and throws 5 touchdowns, and then this is the turning point, and they run it down the stretch, you know, and instead they completely collapsed. And I'm like, this is new. This is different.
What do you think is their problem right now? Like, I've been looking, like, as you say, you look over this team top to bottom with the Packers, and it's kind of like, how are they just completely falling apart the way they are? Because we've done this in the past. You've gone through every excuse in the book when it comes to the Packers, aside from Aaron Rodgers, and eventually they just snap out of their flunk and get back to it. But I mean, it's week 11. Yeah. It's week 11, and they got a losing record.
Yeah, and they had the number one rush defense for almost the entire season, and first drive, DeMarco Murray busts off a 75-yard touchdown run, and you're like,
he was phenomenal.
What is going on? Yeah, he looked like Bo Jackson against basically what's supposed to be the best run defense in the league right now, and you know these corners and safeties, you know, Micah Hyde. I mean, they're just getting roasted by Tajae Sharpe and Rishard Matthews over and over again. And you're going, what is going on here? The pass rush isn't there. They've done a good job of getting some space eaters in the middle. But then on the outside, the pressure that we're used to seeing from Clay Matthews and Julius Peppers hasn't been there. And, offensively, nobody's getting open. They've got protection all day long. And Rodgers is running around and trying to make plays, but they're just not getting open. And when they are getting open, 9 times out of 10, he doesn't trust them to make the catch. It's gotten better over the past few weeks, but at the beginning of the season, it was really like he's staring at and there's nothing. And so, he's playing better than he was at the beginning, but it's not one thing. It's everything. And like last week against the Colts, like, okay, special teams fail. Like, opening kickoff return back for a touchdown. Mason Crosby missed an extra point against the Titans before things got out of hand. You know, like everything is falling apart a little bit, and you start to go, and you know, McCarthy gets up on the podium and is like, oh, I am a very successful football coach. and so I feel things are fine. It's like, bro, you're 4-5. Like, it's almost Thanksgiving and you're looking up at the Vikings and the Lions, and you don't have any answers right now. You just had your worst loss of the season, and it's a little bit of everything right now.
I mean, I'm just looking at this. I forgot about that DeMarco Murray threw like a flea flicker
yes.
in this game too.
Yes.
that happened. That happened.
Oh, and speaking of running, losing Eddie Lacy, they have nothing in the run game. They're completely one-dimensional without Eddie Lacy, and it's killing them. That's not helping at all.
I think the most insane thing too is when McCarthy came out and said, well, Ty Montgomery, he's a three down back. Well, if he's a three down back, what was he ever doing as a wide receiver? Three down backs don't go on line up outside and play wide receiver. It's just, it's insane. I really think he's kind of in over his head almost at this point, you know?
Well, let's we'd be remiss without also talking about the other, because it wasn't just the Packers playing for the NFC North lead here. It was the Vikings. And this is now 4 straight losses for Minnesota. And the Lions are going to see them again on Thanksgiving. You just got to wonder, what kind of team are the Lions going to see come into Ford Field? Like, And I mean, you could probably point to the fact that Blair Walsh missed an extra point again after deciding to keep him. That happened. But at the same time, too, like Washington just like, OK, I saw Washington score late in the game. And we thought you were talking about it, too, Jeremy. You thought it just looks like one of those games where Sam Bradford just going to march down the field. He made that long pass to Stephon Diggs and it just all fell apart at the very end. And like, I mean, Minnesota got like 20 points in 6 minutes and then they did nothing.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like that game was very interesting to me. The Vikings fell down 14-0 real quick. And then everything seemed to click in that second quarter. And by the end of the half, they were up 20-14. And it kind of looked like, okay, maybe Minnesota's finally found their footing. You know, they finally figured out some way to make their offensive line work, which is just a patchwork of nobodies at this point. And their defense, yeah, you know, awful. Finally became what it was in the first half of the season. But then everything disappeared in the second half. They didn't score a second half point, I don't believe. And they, you know, they gave up 2 late field goals, and they did kind of drive in that last drive of the game, and it seemed like maybe they had one last kind of punch there, but then they got, then I think Sam Bradford took a couple sacks, and it was done. So, and now they lost Jake Long for the season, it looks like, so I don't know who they're going to start at tackle, but they're in trouble. They're in a lot of trouble right now, and I don't see any reinforcements coming in for
them. And it's not, Ty, for, like, lack of them trying. Stephon Diggs had, like, a 164-yard game here, and Kyle Rudolph had 69 yards. Nice. But, like, they're getting it done through the air, but it's just, like, I mean, what do you take away from that loss? Because it just looks like Washington was just consistent through the four quarters, and Minnesota had, like, one burst, and that was it.
Yeah, it's funny because I write a like weekly like Monday morning like quick wrap up of everything, you know, and I'm trying to like, how do I describe this game? I'm like, oh, and then Kirk Cousins led a furious 4 field goal comeback over half an hour of football. Okay, you know, and that's, I mean, this defense is still very, very tough to score points on, but offensively, you know, Bradford doesn't have a lot of options beyond Diggs, and you know, they're not using them well. They're still struggling to integrate Cordarrelle Patterson. You know, it's still, I mean, we saw it against the Lions, you know, okay, cool. Bubble screen, hope he breaks something is literally all they've got. So if he's on the field, you know, that's coming. And Rudolph, they're trying to integrate him more. They're trying to be more creative. Like you said, that's great. But you know, Pat Shurmur is still, that's his game, is all this Chrissy Crossy underneath stuff. And then Diggs is the only downfield threat. And, you know, when teams know that's coming, there's only so much you can do. And, you know, obviously you can't fix the personnel. Obviously you can't fix the protection. I think that's a huge thing. It's such a huge thing because you need time for Sam Bradford. He's not going to be an Aaron Rodgers type or, you know, Russell Wilson, you know, that can get away from pressure and make things happen. That's going to scramble for time. That's going to make teams pay for being over aggressive. Like, go ahead, be over aggressive. And go get Sam Bradford, because he's not going to be able to make the decisions quickly and get the ball out quickly enough. Or if he is, you know, there's not the dominant physical guy. There's not a Gronk type that can just go up and get it. There's not anybody you can play, you know, not a Megatron. You can throw up 7 feet in the air and he'll go get it. You know, he's got to be accurate with that football. And, you know, if you rush him and blitz him and hurry him, then he's not going to be able to. I'm sorry. The Matt Asiata experience is also not helping.
Yeah.
The fact that they don't have any balance to that offense is not helping.
Well, I was going to say, the way to kind of tie this back to, you know, if you want to have things to be hopeful about the Lions, and I think you talked about it a little bit, Ty, was the fact that Green Bay doesn't have a run game. The Vikings do not have a run game, largely due in part to the fact that their offensive line is just, you know, held together by paper mache, but you know, no Adrian Peterson, Jerick McKinnon isn't really the guy that they want. Like you said, they're trying out the Matt Asiata experience, and that ride is, you know, a house of horrors. But you know, if you want to have some hope, I think if you're a Lions fan, it's that I don't see any help coming in those terms. The running game isn't going to improve for either of those teams. So, yeah.
And you just hope if you're Detroit, you're just hoping you get Darius Slay back here soon. We'll know later in the week. Check the report, et cetera. But like, I mean, that was a lot of why that game with the Vikings was close for a long time during that game too. Was like, it's like, yeah, no, the Lions don't have their top cornerback. Like, as you say, all they can do is throw, and it would really help if you had a guy like Darius Slay back there.
So I have a question for all you guys then. With the NFC North as it is, the Lions have won 4 out of their last 5. The Bears, Vikings, and Packers have all lost 4 out of their last 5. Which of those teams is most likely to pull out of their tailspin and challenge the Lions for the division at this point?
I need to look at the schedules. Oh my God, I just realized the Vikings are playing the Cardinals next week.
Yeah, they're in trouble.
Oh.
Cardinals are finally starting to turn things around a little bit.
And they got
to
come. I don't know if needing a last minute play to beat the 49ers is coming around.
Okay, that's fair.
That's going to be like 12-9. That's going to be an ugly game.
Yeah.
And then Green Bay has to play at Washington, so I don't think they're going to win next week.
Then they have another road game after that, too. They had 3 straight games that are going to be on the road. Yeah.
At Philly.
Yeah.
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 Oh, my gosh. Okay, so here's Green Bay at Washington. At Philly, then Houston, Texans, Seattle, and then at Bears, Vikings, at Lions. So 3 divisional games to close it 2 on the road. That is not a favorable schedule if you are a Packers fan. That is a favorable schedule if you are a Lions fan.
Yeah, I think the Vikings probably pull out first because it's just like, I just look at that defense and what they can do with Bradford when he's on. And I don't know if you like, I still think there's a chance the Vikings could split and end up winning on Thanksgiving. The way they're taking on injuries, I'm less and less likely about it. But they also get to play the Jaguars 2 weeks after Thanksgiving, too. So I think like they will probably, at the very least, their end of the season schedule is a little more easier because it's like, yeah, Cards, Lions, Cowboys, but then you get Jags, Colts, Packers, and Bears. So they might still be in play, and they might be looking at what happens on New Year's Day with Lions and Packers.
I think just as a Lions fan, and I'm conditioned to just wait for the other shoe to fall.
It's going to fall.
Oh, man. Don't do that. Why say that? But I think I would agree with you, Chris. I think that, you know, I would just go back to the fact that when the Vikings are healthy, when Xavier Rhodes isn't in concussion protocol, and when, you know, they have the guys out there that they, you know, rely on, like Kendricks and, some of their other important players they have, Linval Joseph and whatnot, when those guys are out there and performing, their defense is, you know, almost second to none. I mean, if you want to talk about how the Vikings even got to 5-0, it was because of their defense. So I would venture to put my money on the Vikings challenging the Lions for first place in the NFC North, which the Lions are in right now.
All right, well, let's leave it there. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we got some stuff to talk about with Ty. We kind of figured this was a good time to talk about that dreaded word, national phrase, I should say. It's 2 words. National Perception Alliance. This is why no one likes Alliance, because I can't figure out that it's 2 words. The National Perception Alliance. We've made a lot of noise before about certain things. We're just going to try to dissect this, because this is a interesting beast, and I heard some talk from some ESPN guys, and that kind of got me thinking, but we'll explain all of that next. You're going to want to listen to this. All right, back on here on the Pride of Detroit podcast for the division leading, as of right now, first place Detroit Lions. Jeremy, I feel like you making me do that at the start of the podcast is just going to completely jinx it now.
I can sense the hesitation in your voice. You don't want to say it. Just say it loud and proud, man.
I'm doing the NFL picks with Brian Packey moving forward for a little bit until he gets settled. And I'm telling you right now, if I have a chance to pick that line, I am taking Jacksonville +6.5. Not because I think they're going to lose, but yeah, like you're saying, like that is a larger win that they have not won by 7 all season.
That's fine. So. There's a small congregate of fans though. They're like, we can't celebrate this like it's something, like it's a huge accomplishment. And I say to that, screw that. We've been through enough where that when we're at the top, we need to party like we're at the top.
Yeah, yeah, man. Play Toto. Play Africa.
Photoshop banners.
I mean, yeah, I would, but at the same time, too, I remember 2013. I remember that goddamn snowball in Philadelphia and just falling off the map after that.
Monday Night Football against the Ravens and Justin Tucker kicking like a 50-yard.
And to think, like, the week before all that started was, like, another 40-burger on the Packers. And the Titans just put up a 40-burger on the Packers. Oh, no. I'm thinking too much on this. All right, let's talk about actually, but we're going to be talking about the national media, and just as kind of a preface to that, as kind of an appetizer to that, Ty, just any thoughts you have on Chris Collinsworth just fucking bodying Bill Simmons today and then deleting it, I might add, because
yeah. Well, okay, so...
Should we explain this to people? I don't think everyone here listening's on Twitter, so Bill Simmons... So
from memory, Bill Simmons basically goes, oh, hey, like, can anybody gently break to Chris Collinsworth that the reason Seattle's offensive line looks unusually good against the Patriots is that the Patriots, you know, don't have any pass rush, that their front seven is weak. And which Collins,
is
what
this is. That's such a Bill Simmons thing to do, is just like, oh, a Boston sports team isn't doing well. Like, complain about like one thing to like kind of neg the other team. It's that weird Simmons thing he always does.
And I got to say, he's not wrong. Like, no, I mean, he's not. Aaron Schatz of Football Outsiders had said earlier in the game, he tweeted, hey, if we can't get outside pass rush on this team and specifically this left tackle, that's, you know, we can't get pass rush against anybody. But so, you know, certainly Aaron Schatz not known for his like hot homer takes. But then Chris Collinsworth quote tweets and goes, thanks, Bill. We'll look for you, quote, gently, unquote, breaking it down on that hit show of yours.
And that hit show he's referring to is Any Given Wednesday, which I haven't looked at the ratings, but let's just go with my favorite word, basura. It's just, it's no good. Like they had he had one episode where he complained about Deflategate, and it's just gone downhill from there. And like, and no one's gone. Watching it. Yeah. Well, it's canceled.
It wasn't just he complained. Wasn't that when he had like drunk Ben Affleck on?
Ben Affleck. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. The Ben Affleck
episode.
That
was the big draw.
Yeah.
Like,
the Dark Knight was on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Someone keeps. We get some because we do an SB Nation site. We get some like promo materials in our email all the time. And I had an HBO guy send me every single Wednesday before the show a clip from Any Given Wednesday, and I just didn't even open the emails. I just like I have no interest in this. But this was just fantastic because this is just desserts for Bill Simmons. Kind of like, who was it? I think it was on Deadspin. It was. Yeah, it was Barry Petschke who said this is basically like, this is just desserts to Bill Simmons, because this was his whole career is just crapping on the television men in sports. And he had his own TV show and he just blew it. And so, yeah.
It's tough for me because, okay, number one, generally speaking, like I'm of two minds on Bill Simmons. Number one, I never really liked his writing. Like back in the day, sports blogging OG.
There's so many pop culture references to it.
And it's like the same pop culture references, and it's not everybody's pop culture references. And it's like it was always just one toe over the line too many, like strippers and porno references and stuff, and like one toe over the line too many, like just generally frat boy takes on stuff. And like just the sort of cross between like total Boston homerism, but presented as no, I'm like an objective national guy. So like have to recognize the influence that he has as a sports blogging OG, and some of his stuff, you know, still holds up. Some of his pieces were legitimately great, you know, but a lot of it was just never my cup of tea. Then at the same time, almost everything he's touched as a auteur or visioneer or, you know, editor, whatever. Like I love Grantland so much. And he spots talent and he hires talent and he gives them freedom to do great stuff. And we see a lot of that at the Ringer. You know, there's a lot of cool people doing really cool things mm-hmm. at the Ringer. But then Simmons as, you know, on desk talent, like desk analyst for the NBA. I'm not an NBA guy, but whenever I saw it, you know, and it's like, okay, Bill Simmons and 3X jocks, like this doesn't work. You know,
like it's got to be there like, with Michael Wilbon and Magic Irv and Magic yeah. Johnson. It was the worst crap in the world.
No.
But I think you're right. Like, I think everyone really respects Bill Simmons because of what he does as kind of, as you say, just an analyst of talent. He knows yeah. writers. He knows how to set up projects. But his own writing is just like you just look at it. It's like, I mean, maybe it was kind of, he was the first big sports blogger. That's how he got there. But I'm just, you just kind of wonder how he got there. But I mean, hey, you know, he's made some good projects and this one yeah. just marked out.
Yeah. And podcasting but, and whatever. But like the TV video, we're going to make him the face of everything. Obviously 30 for 30 was amazing. But like this HBO thing, it's always been kind of like, how is this going to translate into must-see TV for the people? And so far it has not.
So what's the bigger L for him, losing his show or losing a Twitter battle to the meek Chris Collinsworth?
Well, because I mean, the contract that he signed with HBO, he's gonna get a redo on this. Like, you
oh
know,
yeah, he's gonna they're be not fine. Gonna be, yeah,
they're not gonna be. Oh well, we're gonna pay him $7 million a year, whatever it was, to sit on the bench for the next 5 years. Like his show lasted 5 episodes. That's just it. We're done. Like he's gonna come up with other stuff. He's gonna do other stuff. It's gonna be fine. The Twitter beef, though, despite the fact that I still think he's in the right from a football perspective, was so righteous, so legendary. And everybody, the memes, the dunk. I mean, we're talking, it was only live for like 4 minutes, the Collinsworth tweet. And the whole, yeah. all of sports media Twitter was just, you know, Vince Carter dunking on people, the rap thing with like you know, Collinsworth with the guy, and then like Tom Brady being there like, oh, no, God. Like, I mean, everything, like, so great. And you know, what can you say? Collinsworth, I wish he'd kept it up, because here's a guy who, I mean, he owns Pro Football Focus now. You know, he still is obviously a TV analyst, but like this guy's secure enough in his brand. And usually as an ex-player, you don't mind taking those shots because you can always come back to look, buddy, I played or whatever. But obviously somebody somewhere went, no, Chris, or maybe he just got, or maybe he went, this is getting too hot too fast. I better pull the plug.
He got up to like 4-digit retweets pretty quick, but
yeah.
All right, let's get it back to the Lions now sure. that we've had our Bill Simmons schadenfreude for the day. The Lions, as we've said, like it's been fascinating to watch kind of how, especially this season, like the Lions always kind of flirt around with a little bit of national attention. But this season, I feel like, and I wrote that column a couple weeks ago about how this is the most exciting football out there. And, you know, I mean, granted, it's going to Lions fans. I don't know if it's going out to a lot of other people, but you know, you look on Monday Night Football and all of a sudden there's more talk about Matt Stafford again. There's mm-hmm. more talk about the Lions just as kind of this team that just never really quits and everything. But I think, and the reason why I got to this is this, is that I was listening to ESPN radio and, you know, it's all nice to hear like that kind of little bit of glad handing you get from some Monday night guys when you, it's like you get your set, your team gets that segment on there. You get Tony Dungy talking about yes. your team for 10 yes. minutes rather yes. than just glossing over a highlight for 30 seconds. And that's all the difference in the world. But then these guys on ESPN, I really wish I could remember the name. I feel they were one of those, like it was one of those Sunday shows that ESPN puts on, like when everyone else is listening to the NFL. So I don't even remember the guys, but they were basically
sports reporters like, or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, but their general gist was basically this is like, and they weren't even talking about the Lions. They were talking about other things. They were talking about the idea of how do you tell the story of the NFL? And they were talking about the idea that like, oh, the Rams, even though they won a Super Bowl, like you could cut them out of history entirely and you'd still be able to tell the quote unquote story of the NFL. And that just kind of filled me with a little bit of despair. One, because I thought they were just dead wrong, because if they had said yeah. that in the 90s, they wouldn't have included the Patriots in there mm-hmm. or even the or the Seahawks even, although I don't know how long the Seahawks thing, but I mean, definitely the Patriots are now one of the royalty of the NFL, but
sure.
that just made me think, like, I mean, man, as a Lions fan, it's going to have to take that just to be like a big team like that, to have a fan base that can command that kind of national attention. Is that what it's going to have to take? Like, you know, the Cowboys and the Eagles are, once they're made, they can just hang around for years and years. Like the Bears can get four national games, but for someone like the Lions to come up, it's going to have to take a decade of just unmitigated success.
You know, it's something like that. And first off, I like double dare you to tell Merlin Olsen that to his face, that you can cut the Rams out of NFL history. And
I wouldn't. You, all these teams are born like that. Yeah.
I know. But, and of course, this is just generally, you know, the living memory of the NFL, and the NFL right. network and NFL media does nothing to stop this. Like, I basically, Steve Young is as far back, like, oh, never in NFL history has this ever happened. And by mean NFL history, I mean 1992.
Like, just, like, you know, and with some lip service to, like, the beginning of, like, the Super Bowl. And that's right, kind of considered, right. like, the genesis of the NFL. But, like, even going further back than that, like, no one talks about, like, pre-merger NFL. No one talks about when there was, like, you know, teams in Iron Hills or Kenosha or anything like that.
Right.
I think you're right. The NFL is just really bad with their history.
And, I mean, like,
they're like, not like baseball like that.
There
yeah.
are people, like, who don't know that Mike Ditka was Gronkowski 40 years before Gronkowski. You know, like, I was looking up stuff and it's like, oh, here's Mike Ditka in a playoff game catching 11 for like 164 and three, when like the best wide receivers weren't doing that. I mean, it's ridiculous, you know, 1962 or whatever it was, 64 I think that was. But, you know, I mean, like, okay, there's this whole history of the NFL that people just, you know, ignore and wash over. Part of the thing is the regional fan base of, you know, you had the Cowboys being so good for so long, but then they also cover this huge blanket, you know, pre-Texans, obviously, Oilers in and out, you know, but they cover this huge swath of, you know, Oklahoma and Arizona and all these other states. Whereas, you know, you go up to Detroit and obviously there's Chicago, there's Green Bay, there's Minnesota, there's two Ohio teams, there's the Steelers right there. And we still, to this day, you know, I know people around me that are Steelers fans. I know people around me that are Packers fans. Some of them migrated from the UP, you know, whatever it is. Bears fans, a lot of guys like 3, 4, 5 years older than me, I'm 35, are Bears fans because, you know, they were coming of age. They were 6, 7, 8, 9, and there was Walter Payton, and the Bears are the best team in the world, and the Lions are nobody. So they were Bears fans.
Right. You know? So, and, like, you know, ESPN always talks about, like, how much their traffic derives from when you get to talk to them. It's like all of it's from, like, you know, we get our traffic comes from Eagles fans and Cowboys fans and Giants fans.
Yes.
And maybe some 49ers fans, but, like, that's it. Like, yeah, throw in the Pats too, but, like, that's it. Those are the only teams that seem to really, those are the teams that just dominate so much of, like, who is listening. That they yes. feel like they have yes. to cater to that.
Yes, you do. NFC East, Pats, and Steelers, Niners, and that's like 70% of your traffic if you're a website, or ratings if you're a TV show. And that's in the early days of Bleacher Report. That's why Bleacher Report was so successful, was they were like, we're going to cover all 32 teams like they're all 32 teams. And we're going to put the same amount of effort into every single team. And that means half the teams, we're going to own national level coverage just because we're willing to write an article about these teams, you know? So that was a big differentiator in the beginning. You know, for me, the Lions, you know, obviously the 30s and the 50s are very far removed. The Barry years, people just remember as the Barry years, and not necessarily, you know, a 10-year stretch of more or less playoffness mixed in with a couple 5-11 years mixed in. I mean, this is a team that was perennially, you know, squaring off against Brett Favre for either the right to go to the playoffs or in the playoffs. This team was perennially challenging the early Denny Green Vikings. This is a team that was definitely in the mix in that 9-7, 10 win, 11-12 in the beginning. But then since Barry left, all people have are the memories of this, you know, completely uncompetitive team. Stafford has changed some of that. But there's still, like, people forget when I talk to people, and it's like, oh, well, like, the Lions are, like, you know, terrible, right? And actually, I should preface this. Stephanie Stradley, who I've known for a long time, she's a Texans blogger, and she writes for the Houston Chronicle. She said, okay, like, what's changed over the last couple of years? And she does this for every opponent, but you know, what's changed over the last couple of years from this team? Like, well, are you talking about like the team that won 11 games and should have gone to the, you know, should have not even given Dez the opportunity to Dez should have caught it? Or are you talking about the team that like, you know, went 6-2 or the team that lost out to finish 7-9? Are you talking about the team that won all those and then, you know, lost all those games and then ran the table? Are you, because it's basically all the same team. You know,
right,
it's Stafford. Right. It's all these offensive linemen that were drafted high and aren't good. It's all these defensive linemen that were drafted high. You know, it's these wide receivers that keep getting signed as free agents. I mean, this is basically the same team, even though the names have changed around a little bit. They still have the same philosophies. They still have the same, you know, win or lose with Stafford. They still don't have like a strong running game. All these things are the same. And yet the results fluctuate wildly between this is a team that can contend for the NFC title, and this is a team that is uncompetitive. And, you know, it's tough to get any sort of single identity across, but I'll tell you, you know, I was doing a St. Louis radio spot this morning, or, you know, Tuesday
morning. You get around all over the place.
I do. And I'm sorry to keep dropping the plugs.
No, by all means, if you got it, drop
this
it.
I'm trying to give national perspective here. Like, this is the first time I'd been on at this station, the St. Louis station. And they're like, yeah, so like this Ty Shelter, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, what do you think Matthew Stafford's MVP chances are? And I was literally like, that thought had literally not crossed my mind until right now. And of course, you know, I rolled with it, but I'm just sitting there going, wow, I'm getting asked, what are Matthew Stafford's MVP chances here in the middle of the season, you know, November? And that's not something that I think would even occur to a Lions fan, because we have so much baggage around him and have to contextualize all these performances. And that distance, going from being like the homeriest Lions blogger homer to a national columnist and going, wow, okay, seeing this from the 32 team view completely changes your perspective on a lot of things, some for the better, some for the worse. And, you know, getting that distance and seeing what Stafford's doing right now, is it's just really unbelievable how much he's changed and how much a difference that makes. And, you know, kind of, I think, you know, kind of retroactively validates a lot of the stuff from, you know, 2, 3, 4 years ago, where I'm like riding Stafford. Like, why are you so negative about Stafford? I'm like, because I'm completely in the tank for Stafford. That's why I'm ready. Like, you guys don't understand. He's so good. He could be so much better than this. Like, he absolutely should be a top 5 quarterback easily, because the physical talent that he has and because of what we've seen. And the errors that I'm seeing are errors of focus, errors of preparation, errors of effort, errors of attitude. And he's just not doing the things that he needs to do. And doing those things has completely changed it. I told you guys, you know, before we started rolling, I interviewed Eric Ebron this Sunday morning on my radio show, you know, and I was like, what's different? What's changed? And he goes, his attitude, Stafford's attitude. Like, we hit that point, you know, last year, Jim Bob Cooter comes in and Stafford immediately, you could just see him go, okay, it's on me now, you know, and his attitude change and that leadership, we all saw it and we all, okay, wow. Like, this is, we've got to fall in behind him, you know, and that's what it's been since there. And I'm like, thank you. Like, yes, I've been calling for this, and now we see it. I wrote an article that was basically like, okay, look at what Stafford's doing. You know, 5 fourth quarter comebacks, 5 game winning drives, and 5 wins. Like the Lions right now, Stafford's completely the difference between winning and losing. The as far back as they've calculated it, the all time leader is Manning with 7. And Stafford has 5 through 9. So that's how much they've relied on him to be that clutch and be that good. And he's going to continue. If he continues that, that's going to be the difference between them being good or not. And I don't think people really have a sense of how much worse this defense has been without DeAndre Levy, how terrible the pass defense has been. how awful a situation they've put him in over and over and over and what he's had to overcome. But if you're talking about the decades long sweep of things, there's this combination of like lovable loser. I'm like a Lions fan. They're like, oh yeah, they're cool, but suck. I'm like, that's fair. You know, yeah, they're cool, but they suck, you know, generally. And you know, and or mixed with some sort of like, you know, Detroit ruin porn, poverty, rebirth thing.
I mean, there definitely is some of that. Like, I know, like, Joe, Bomani Jones always talks about, like, you know, Detroit as, like, a cultural city was, it was a lot different back in the 80s. And or even the 70s, it had a very different place in American imagination and American culture than it definitely does today. And a lot of that's because a lot of the populations moved, a lot of the populations kind of spread across the country, and Detroit's kind of been dragged through the dirt as far as its name, as far as its image in a lot of ways. And I think people just see that. And I think, I don't know, Ryan, you live up there right now. Like, do you feel like that kind of goes like hand in hand with a lot of this?
I mean, I think that there's definitely some credence to that. You know, I mean, you talk about how things have kind of spread out from the city. I mean, think about how, you know, Tom Gores has even taken the moves to, you know, try to relocate and re-centralize everything. I mean,
yeah, he wants to move the Pistons right. back
He
downtown.
Wants to, you know...
You wouldn't have thought that, like, 20 years ago with Davidson.
Right. I don't think that would even cross his mind, because the Palace was his baby. But, you know, I don't want to get too off topic. But what I'm saying is, like, you know, you have this pull now where Gores wants to, you know, move the last remaining of the, you know, four professional sports teams, you know, the four major sports back downtown. So you have all four sports within, you know, a few blocks of each other. And I don't know what that's going to do for the city necessarily, but I think that, you know, just when it comes to the Lions, I have such fond memories, I think, because I am younger. Let me date myself. I'm a decade younger than Ty, but, you know, I just came into the, you know, my first memories of the Lions are going to the Pontiac Silverdome and, you know, seeing Barry run wild. And then it was, for the most part, a decade of incompetence. You know, I totally agree with what Ty said. You know, you had Barry, and then, you know, after Barry, it was just, it was nothing. It was 0-16. And, you know, if you want to come back, Chris, to what you're saying about hearing, you know, you could wipe the Rams clean of NFL history and you can still tell the history of the NFL. I mean, can you tell the NFL history? Can you tell the story of the NFL without the Detroit Lions?
For 0-16, I think the Browns are trying to remove them from history if they pulled this off. Oh, hold up here. He's showing us a picture on our Skype. Is that you, Ty?
That is me going as Billy Sims.
Oh, that's not very fancy.
For Halloween. No. Important note. Billy Sims had been out of the NFL for a year and a half when this costume was purchased, but he was still the only Lion worth putting on a Halloween uniform as far as the NFL Halloween manufacturers were concerned.
Well, I just took a screen cap of that, so maybe we'll use that as our episode image or something. I don't know. Let me ask you this then, because I know we've had this conversation a lot too, but just in the idea, going back to the central idea of national perception, because I was reading, I think it was on Vice. It was, I'm trying to remember if it was by you or by someone else. I think it was by Aaron Gordon.
Yeah.
Aaron Gordon, who I really like from over there, but he was talking about, or it might have been someone else now. I get so confused sometimes, but just the idea of like superstars lost, and you would always see among these superstars lost from the ranks of the NFL. They listed off Peyton Manning. They listed off who else was lost from the past year or so besides Marshawn Lynch, but they also put in Calvin Johnson as a superstar. And I hadn't really thought of him in that kind of national superstar level before, but like, and I think that hurt. I mean, that obviously hurt the prognosticators when first talking about the Lions and their chances. Like, well, they don't have Calvin Johnson now. They're dead in the water. But at the same you also remove a very big reason for outside people to watch Lions games for not having Calvin Johnson. So do you think that hurt at all, or are people coming around hugely, because it's Stafford?
Hugely. I was stunned when I saw a lot of the power rankings and whatnot from other national outlets, you know, where they got the Lions. Oh, yeah. Like, well, they were a 7-win team. Calvin's worth 3 or 4 wins by himself. This is a 3 or 4 win team. Like, so many places did that. And I'm like, guys, you have not been paying any attention. And it's the toughest thing for me, again, in this transition from homeriest homer in the world, whose website is like, imthebiggesthomer.com, to national objective journalist. If you haven't been watching, if you haven't been paying attention, you don't understand how, you know, little, honestly, Calvin's been a part of the game plan over the past couple of years, how well Golden Tate had played, you know, how much Eric Ebron figured to take a step forward. And, you know, the beat writers have been saying so all spring and summer, like, look out, this guy's going to have a big impact. You know, Marvin Jones filled a very clear, specific niche in terms of verticality that Calvin had in the red zone, even though that didn't, you know, obviously nobody is going to replace Calvin Johnson as a freak, but like overall, there's a little bit of viewing theory here that has some validity to it. And obviously that's been borne out. So,
right, Jeremy, I remember we were like, did that poll before this year started where it's like, do you think the Lions like offense got better without Calvin Johnson? We ran that poll. We thought it came back negative 70%. And like we had guys from the Detroit News panning us.
This was wide receivers, not even offense. Did the wide receivers get better?
We had people in the Detroit media and like I think even a couple in the national media who picked up and they were just laughing at it. It's like, look at these deluded Lions fans. And,
again, how did we get to 7-9? To me, that was the big question. It's like, okay, yeah, look at 7 wins. Okay, well, you know, 1-7, switch a coordinator, 6-2, with Stafford having, you know, whatever his rating, you know, 106, whatever it was down the stretch. If you're taking the 6-2 team and projecting it forward, as opposed to going, let's look at the whole sweep of the season and average the worst team in the league versus one of the best teams in the league. They're in the middle. You know, I just that whole perspective was completely lost by a lot of national people. And, you know, and especially, and like, guys, go look at like the Vegas odds. You know, the Lions were like 14th or 15th or something at one point for Vegas futures for the Super Bowl. And I'm like, this is not now and wasn't ever going to be a bottom 5, 2, 3, 4 win team. There's just too much talent on both sides of the ball. And even if Stafford wasn't going to do what he did over the last half of 2015 for 16 games in 2016, still just, you know, complete, just a lot of people miss that.
I was just going to say, I kind of have a question because we're talking about how the national media is finally kind of grabbing onto Stafford. And part of it is that he has made that turn, but I kind of want to go back maybe through the last 5 years, because he had that breakout year in 2011, probably his best statistical year ever, except for maybe his interception percentage was a little high then. But since then, the Lions have been a 500 football team. They've been in contention almost every year since then. Why has it taken the media that long? Like, I kind of view them as that 90s team that we were talking about that was at least in the mix every other year. They've made the playoffs twice since 2011. They were in it in 2013 before they collapsed. Why now? What now is getting people's attention?
Well, before you throw it to Ty, my own theory on that is just 2012. Yeah. Like, you start 4-4 and just crater your way to the end of the season. I think that probably dented any future talk of the Lions, because it's like, all right, we can't trust these guys.
Yeah,
but that's... Ty, what do you think?
Yeah, no, that's certainly part of it. And again, it's like, it's one of those, okay, you know, we keep having these, you know, hot start, cold finish, cold start, hot finish. You know, they're not able to do it and set a tone and carry it throughout a season over the past few years. And so nobody really has any identity to grab onto except Stafford is there and mediocrity. So that's kind of what comes across in the final standings. And, you know, and I did when I look back at Stafford, I'm like, okay, if you take the last 8 games of 2015 and the first 8 games of 2016, that 16 game stretch, if you compare it to any other 16 game season by any quarterback over 16, you know, since they went to the 16 game schedule in 72 or whatever it was, it's like the 11th best ever. It's like Manning twice, Brady twice, that one Culpepper year, Steve Young, one Kurt Warner year, Dan Marino. I mean, it's like, it's literally, that's how good it is from a passer rating, touchdown percentage, interceptions. You know, Rodgers, I'm sure, made at least one. You know, but this is like the 13th best 16 game season that any quarterback has had. It just happened over the last half of last year and the first half of this year. And so people don't really understand it because the tone isn't set that way. And so again, you know, if they continue to rack up close wins against great teams, and you know, we talked about the national perspective, you know, if they go on the road at the Giants, at the Cowboys, and win close games, nobody's going to be able to stop talking about the Lions. You know, if the Lions are the team that knocked the Cowboys off the perch, it's going to be Lions Central until, you know, the playoffs. Everybody's going to be freaking out about them. And so, you know, it comes in those showcase games. It comes in those signature moments. And, you know, if they had beaten the Lions and if they'd beaten the Cowboys in 2014, you know, in the playoffs, you know, that one call on Ebron, the pass interference call, if you switch that around and it's the Lions against the Packers, I think that is totally different because people are still, oh, the Cowboys are like one bad call away from the title. So the Cowboys were one bad call away from not being there. You know, the Lions should, and like that whole season, which was so huge. It was like the all in season. They bring in Caldwell. It's Sue's last year. Could be, they're already talking about Calvin maybe being gone. You're like, oh my gosh, this is the year. And then they go all the way into the playoffs and get that far. And like most people don't even really remember that.
Yeah.
Nationally, no,
It was a footnote. And you talk about national games too, and just taking advantage of it. I mean, they hope to take advantage of it because again, like, as I said at the beginning, one primetime game for the Lions this year. And how many did the Bears get in like the first half of the season, Jeremy?
Four in the first eight games.
So the Bears, and I said this with Eric Edholm, who's at least Chicago-based Yahoo national writer. I was talking to him, and you know, and I started describing it using a less clean metaphor, like a really clunky, messy one. And I was talking myself in circles, as I do sometimes. I don't know if you guys noticed, but he goes, "No, it's like the Bears are like preseason." I'm talking about the Bears were like the old picture with like the pretty woman, and then you flip it and it's the old lady. Like you could make the case like, okay, you got Jay Cutler, you got Alshon Jeffrey, Kevin White's coming back, got the great offensive line. You're thinking, you know, Langford might be able to take a step forward. They got Kadeem Carey, they got a couple of guys.
Yeah, who's the guy they got in free agency? Yeah, the linebacker in free agency.
Pernell McPhee,
yeah.
Drafted Leonard Floyd, yeah.
Yeah, Leonard Floyd, absolutely. You know, so you're looking at this team and you're like, wow, like there's a lot. And hey, John Fox, historically, the second year he takes over a team, you know, it takes like a 5-win leap forward, did it with both the Panthers and the Broncos. You know, Vic Fangio gets a second year, complicated system, did really well. So you can piece together this whole reality where the Bears were headed towards a 9 or 10 win season, pushing the Packers, pushing the Vikings in the mix. And I also think that hurt the Lions' chances nationally when people are looking at the division. Oh, well, of course, you know, the Vikings are going to be right there, potential Super Bowl team. Packers are going to be right there, potential Super Bowl team. The Bears are certainly going to be a lot better than they were last year. Lions lost Calvin. Like yeah. That's how you wrap it up. Yeah. So that's one of the reasons why people just looked at this team and went, and then you start the season, and really it was 1-2, not even 1-3. You know, the start season 1-2, you know, basically get blown out by the Packers, make it close at the end. But that was when really, you know, cause I'm listening to like, you know, podcasts and stuff and that week leading up and Lions are bad and they should feel bad. Like, you know, write them off, you know, and that,
hey man,
things turn around quickly after that.
Number one in the division. So I think just to sum it down here, just kind of put a bow on this. Lions, if you want that national attention, if you want to be dissected every Sunday like the Cowboys or something, just make sure to keep winning on your primetime games. Maybe go a little ways in the playoffs and get that little preseason push. But it's definitely complicated, but I think we kind of made a little heads and tails of it. So thanks a lot, Ty.
Absolutely. Anytime, guys.
Do you guys want to stick around and do the mailbag with us? We usually have a lot of questions here for some Lions fans. Not always with the Lions, but we got plenty here.
I would like to. I'm keeping an eye on the upstairs, and the kids aren't too rambunctious yet. So, but if I like bail out in the middle, I just know that I love all of you, and I wish I could have stayed to the
end. That's funny. That's funny. We'll have you on for the mailbag. I like that. Just the idea of like we'll be in the middle of a question. It'll be like, oh no, we lost Ty. Oh no,
it's happened like once or twice on the air on SiriusXM, and we so it became a running joke. Like if we ever have to pre-tape an interview, because on Sunday morning a lot of NFL players aren't free, so sometimes we have to we have to pre-tape our interviews. They're all live. No, but sometimes we have to pre-tape our interviews, and so if only one of us can cover, if I can't make it for that taping, then my co-host Jason Cole will make up some extravagant excuse of what my children have done to me, and that's why I'm not there for this one segment in the middle of this otherwise live two-hour show.
The new wave of media. Anyway, let's take a quick time out and we'll get into the mailbag, because this is looking to be fun. Okay, mail time. That noise right there you heard, mulling the word mail, that was Alex Reno, who is not with us. Ryan, where is Alex?
Who cares?
No.
We don't let him off the hook. And you know what, Ty, it's not bad if you wanna, you know, pile on Alex, but he left us. remember kids, he left us.
He left us for Umish Dearborn and all his very important coding homework.
Such a Spartan, huh?
He'll be back.
He's on the right track. He's a good guy. He's on the right track. He's getting his life in order.
Shut it.
We're just going to keep squeezing him until he comes back.
Jeremy Reisman in his Fitzgerald Toussaint jersey weighing in.
I heard that name yesterday on the Steelers Cowboys game.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Fitz Toussaint. He had a big non-play.
That's right. Oh, yeah, that's right. It was added.
He failed to intercept Ben's amazing shovel pass that was going to be the great touchdown to Jesse James, and Fitz Toussaint comes leaping in from nowhere to
ruin
basically
the day.
Bat away the touchdown from his own teammate, and Jesse James is like, bruh, that was going to be, yeah, no, ugh.
All right, let's see here. Let's take a question actually from a very dear friend of ours who always seems to find his way into our Twitter mentions, Jeff Risden. Sideline Report and Real GM. He has this one for the staff at Pride of Detroit. Which staff member barked at the supermoon the longest?
It's got to be you, Chris.
You think so?
I mean, yeah, one too many Moscow mules and you're liable to grow some extra hair on your chest. And
that's true. That's true. All right. Let's see here. What else we got? Okay, I like this. Melvin234 has a question for us, and I swear there's some Lions questions in here. And if you want to make sure you get your own question in, by all means, send them when we put up the Ask POD post. And hey, if you leave a review for us too, we will read it. We don't have a lot of time on this podcast, but I know we have some new reviews, so we're going to read those next time. But let's see here. Melvin234 asks, multiple choice quiz. I was at the grocery store yesterday. They had the remaining candy marked 75% off. I grabbed like $10 worth of bags of Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, Twix, and Kit Kats. The wife scoffed at my purchase, but I think I showed great restraint only spending $10. So did I A, act immaturely, B, make a wise investment in my sugary future, or C, not get enough?
That's a great question.
Very Lions question. I like it.
I have to go with B. I'm not going to say you didn't get enough because you got $40 worth of candy, and that's and Halloween's over, so I don't know what you're going to do with $40. Like, that'll take you in, hopefully, to the new year. So I'll just say, why sugary investment?
I gotta concur. Absolutely concur. And not just because you got $40 worth of candy for $10, but you spent it wisely. Reese's, Kit Kat, solid choices. You know, you didn't go overboard. You didn't go like full Sam's Club and end up with a bunch of candy that's gonna go bad.
You didn't get Butterfingers.
I'm gonna go with D. You know, you didn't get the right candy. You missed the boat on getting. You missed the boat on getting the crispity, crunchity, peanut buttery Butterfinger. I think that, you know, the Butterfinger, clearly one of the most popular candy. In terms of,
he can't
even
finish the sentence without laughing because he doesn't believe in his own words.
We still need to find a Butterfinger Buzz.
You can't eat a Butterfinger Buzz now. I think it will legitimately kill you. I think the FDA probably pulled those off the shelves with reason.
It's going to be like, you know, the Indiana Jones Last Crusade. You just take a bite out of it, you dissolve into dust, and it's like he chose poorly.
Ty, do you remember the Butterfinger Buzz?
No, this is completely
right. Okay. Energy bar, candy bar.
The Butterfinger decided to inject caffeine into it.
His like, face. I just saw a horror cross Ty's face.
Oh no, that's no good, guys.
Okay. Here we go. Actually got a Lions question here, and I actually really like this one. Okay, GV42 sends us a hypothetical. Here's a hypothetical he's got. Levy is confirmed to play against the Jags, and Amir Abdullah and John Bosix are both ready to be taken off the IR and would start. So who are you pulling off IR and why? Again, complete hypothetical, because I'm pretty sure Abdullah's done for the year. But I think this is more of a question of, do the Lions need more help in the run game or on, like, the midfield and pass rush defense?
Yeah, I think some people are still holding out hope that Abdullah is the guy that they bring back from IR. I don't think it's going to happen. But in this hypothetical world, you would bring him back for sure if Levy's back. Like, I'll take Levy, Bynes, Whitehead the rest of the season, that's fine with me. Because the Lions running game has been lost without Abdul. They don't really have a guy, a pure runner on the team right now. So Abdul looked good through those first two games. I'd love to have that on the roster right now. I don't think it's actually going to happen, though.
Man, I struggle with this because Abdullah, for me, I'd love to see him back on the field, but at the same time, I'm kind of like, okay. And this is, other than Zenner, this has been the whole thing where I'm like, okay, I'm looking at the Lions. I'm like, okay, so we've got, you know, Abdullah is the home run hitter and Riddick is like the third down back. And then like there's the spark plug and the change of pace guy. Like these are all the same guy. It's like a running back committee where like everybody does the same thing, you know, and you know, they're not complementary. There's, you know, nobody brings something. Like obviously Theo Riddick and Amir Abdullah are not the same player, but they bring, you know, it's like there's like an 82 or 84% overlap of their skill set and what they do versus, you know, Levy or Bostic. I mean, right now for me, the linebacker's inability to either cover or hit their run fits is the story of this team. It's the weakness of this team. The fact that the zone coverages have been so porous and easy to exploit. I haven't checked in a couple weeks, but like a couple weeks ago, the opposer passing rating was like 117.3. Like Matt Stafford was like the third highest rated passer, but everybody else, and we're talking by everybody else, I'm talking about Case Keenum, Brock Osweiler, Brian Hoyer, like those guys all averaged out to 10 points better than Matthew Stafford, as well as Matthew Stafford was playing. So that's where I turn around and look at, you know, the linebacker's inability to cover or stop the run. And to hear Whitehead, you know, I like it. I love his athleticism. I love his attitude. But you know, he's part of the solution as opposed to part of the problem, given the talent that they have. He's got to stop biting on the play fakes. Like I tweeted this out, like every play action pass is the first play action pass to hear Whitehead has ever seen in his life. Every single time, it's just like, what? Like he acted like he was going to hand it off, but now he's throwing. Is that allowed? Like every time, you know, just he bites so hard on it. And it's like those sorts of things have to get fixed, and they haven't been fixed. And I've been saying this again since like week two or week three, you know, and part of it's been the injuries, part of it's been the inexperience of the guys that have been bringing on the field. But either these guys can't do what they're being asked to do, or they don't understand what they're being asked to do. And either way, that feels like a coaching problem. And you got to get Levy back on the field. You got to show up the linebacking core however you can, because I think everything, especially once Slay gets back, everything's going to trickle down from there. That the middle of the field is fixed. The zone coverages are fixed. And the run fits are halfway decent behind that defensive line.
All right, next question here. Going back to Twitter for a second. Where was it? Mac from Luke Mac 11. Should we hope the Cowboys keep winning so that they rest players against the Lions? Jeremy, I think we were talking about this earlier, right?
We talked about it a little bit yesterday. I would take a hollow win on Monday night. I don't care. On the road against Dallas, a win's a win. Hell yeah.
Especially in this division? Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
How about would you rather, if you're the Lions, would you rather see Tony Romo or Dak Prescott?
Romo. Give me Romo.
Is Mark Sanchez an option?
What about our boy? Is our beautiful boy Kellen Moore still there? Or did he get the axe? Did I miss that?
He got hurt.
He's hurt. That's right. Yeah.
He got an axe to his leg, I think.
Okay. Evan, I want to read his Twitter handle here. Big Slick McDick asks us, without looking it up, how many of you know what POD stands for, as in the band POD?
Oh,
great question.
I know it. So I'm just going to see if you guys can do it.
All I know is they stand for the youth of the nation. That's all.
Bunch of 36-year-old dudes singing We Are the Youth of a Nation, by the way.
Not any younger either.
I don't know how old they are now, but they were definitely solidly in their mid-30s when they wrote that. Booyaka.
It stands for payable on death.
Perfect.
All right. Next question we got here. Big Haircut wants to ask, if you had to eat one type of chip for the rest of your life, what would it be? So be specific, flavor and brand.
That's tough because I'm not brand specific, but give me like a salt and vinegar kettle chip.
Ooh, that's a manly choice.
There you go.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's good. Yeah, that's solid.
I'm going a little more industrial here. I want the
more industrial chip. Than salt and vinegar.
Okay. All right. Cheddar. But I mean like bigger brand, not like a kettle chip or something. I want Ruffles cheddar and sour cream. Yep. And I'll tell you why, because
you just want to go more commercial.
Yep. No, yep. Hold up. Like that was, I lived 2 years in Canada and that was not an available flavor for Ruffles up in Canada. And I could not live without those chips. I had to get care packages of just Ruffles cheddar and sour cream shipped up to me in Vancouver because they had other flavors. They had like sour cream and onions. I wasn't having that. I wasn't having the ketchup flavor either. Don't let a Canadian talk you into ketchup flavored chips. They're not good.
Okay.
Cheddar and sour cream.
Okay. Hold on.
The commercially available. Did I say something?
No. I'm looking up. I can't get these here. My father-in-law is from South Dakota, and so he has a line on these things. You can get it at Meyer's Choice is the Lay's Kettle Cut aged cheddar and black pepper. Like they're the lattice cut, they're like waffle.
The texture on those things.
Those are very good. The only problem is I have to wait for their like the 2 for $6 because otherwise it's like $4 for like the little tiny bags. So you have to wait for like the sale to get them. but I Googled this. You can order it off the Menards website.
Oh my God.
Right. Save it's called Ayers Hair. I don't know if we're going with the German pronunciation. Ayers. H-E-R-R-S. Apostrophe S. Fire roasted sweet corn potato chips. These things are spectacular. They are like a barbecue. Like you can taste the fire roast. You can taste the sweet corn. It's a barbecue in a bag. Absolutely spectacular. I cannot recommend them.
Corn flavored potato chips is very flyover state.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah,
that's like super that's South like,
Dakota. Yeah,
that's like real America potato chip right there. Yes. Ryan, what potato chip are you getting?
Oh man, it's tough because Downey's is just located pretty close to me in Waterford. The Downey's chip is spectacular, but I'm gonna go for a more cheap pop. The Better Made Sweet Barbecue chips.
Yeah.
There you go.
Better Made Sweet Barbecue. Very
like it.
Very solid choice.
Very solid. Absolutely. No complaints there.
I almost went Cool Ranch Doritos, but for very personal.
But you're not
reasons,
an animal.
It was an inside joke. I had one friend down in Savannah who, when he would get high, all he would talk about was Cool Ranch Doritos. Like just like how you do, Ryan, with the Butterfingers. You know all the facts about the Butterfingers. This guy knew all the facts about the Cool Ranch Doritos. So we would always make sure every party to have Cool Ranch Doritos.
How dare you lump me in with Cool Ranch Dorito guy just because of my Butterfinger take?
Can you ask Cool Ranch Dorito guy what the blue speck is? I've always wanted to know what the blue speck is because it scares me.
I can't.
Lion's zest.
Lion's zest.
Yes. Okay. Let's find a Lion's question here. We're almost done with this mailbag, but man, we haven't had too many Lions questions, which means this is a good mailbag. By the way, we have about, let's see, we've got three questions here. What exactly is there ailing DeAndre Levy? Hashtag where is Levy? When is hashtag DeAndre Levy coming back? Jeremy, you just want to make do the drop here?
Yeah. Just give it to him. Give it to him straight.
Check the injury report.
I don't know why people keep I'm kind of fascinated. I think maybe speaking to our credit that people are like assuming we have like some inside line on Levy's health. Like when we know, we'll let you know. We don't know though.
I found a picture of him on Snapchat today.
You did? So yeah, we are the leading expert on Lions Snapchat.
I threw that up on Pride of Detroit just to get people excited a little bit. He's in the building.
Mad.
Hey, the next time we talk to Jeff Moss, we'll get you an update on how DeAndre Levy's doing.
Jesus, he said the name. Okay. Blake Berry, if you could take any of the Pistons and put them on the Lions, who would it be and vice versa? I feel like we've had this question before, hadn't we?
No, that was the Tigers.
We had it for Stafford. Like, what position would Stafford play on the Pistons?
Piston.
I said mascot.
But oh yeah, mass. Yeah, yeah. I think we admitted he would cut a very fat Hooper. Yeah, but man, I could see Drummond playing football. Maybe he'd be one hell of a cornerback.
Yeah, you don't have to shoot free throws in football, so he'd be an incredible something. I don't know.
just that's some shade right there you're throwing. All right, we got a question here. Let's see here from Snow Lion. Westworld, are you watching? Is Will the Man in Black, MIB, I think it's Man in Black? Is Arnold alive? Give us your take. I'm sorry, I haven't watched Westworld yet. I actually kind of want to because I liked the original movie and I've heard the show's like really good. Although I've heard it's also very masturbatory on just kind of like on what it is as prestige TV. It does a lot of things that people are just like lambasting prestige TV for doing. Like a lot of people just seem to finally be turning on the idea of highbrow TV because of what Westworld is trying to pull off.
I'm actually up to date on Westworld, but I'm not one of these people that goes all in on TV shows and like starts writing down fan fictions or theories or things like that, because sometimes they ruined Mr. Robot for me season 2 because someone caught the twist right away and I stumbled upon it when I didn't want to, and it kind of ruined it when the big twist happened. Like, oh, it's just a thing that people have been saying it is for 6 weeks now. That takes the fun out of it.
I got ruined on the fan theory thing in between the second and third installments of The Matrix. Like, I spent like 6 months going down the rabbit hole on like, oh my gosh, like fan theories. Oh yeah. And then like, all of that was complete crap and it's just bad. Like that's, yeah, like no.
I remember the build up to like, what was the first, The Matrix Reloaded, when it was like the Animatrix and everything, like they were like just blitzing with all this Matrix related stuff. And I was really deep in that stuff too, like Utah.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, no, just after that, I'm just kind of like, oh, this is complete fucking letdown.
By the way, first Matrix and the Animatrix, all still awesome. Like if you delete the two sequels from history, they still all completely stand up.
What's two sequels?
Yeah, right. Thank you. But the Westworld for me is really tough because I've been trying to break into the science fiction and fantasy writing market for 2.5 years now. And I wrote this flash fiction piece I was really pleased with. That touches on a lot of the same themes. And I sent it to a couple of pro editors, and both of them both came back with, ooh, like, this touches on a lot of stuff in Ex Machina. Did you see Ex Machina? And I was like, no, I didn't. And they're like, yeah, you want to see that because, like, A, this kind of seems like a little bit of a ripoff of it. And, like, B, like, you should just see it because it's cool. And I was like, okay, like, cool, thank you. And then Westworld comes, it's like, confetti. Like, I wrote, like, it's the, you know, no, there's no unexplored ground here. Everybody's seen all of this stuff, and it's, yeah.
Well, the original movie, Westworld, that was, like, written and directed by Michael Crichton.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of that was, like, a lot of what he did on that movie, kind of, he poured it into the book version of Jurassic Park. Just kind of very much the same kind of overarching themes going in there. And obviously, from what I understand, the TV show is taking a lot of liberties with the material and kind of changing up the perspective. But yeah. Ryan, have you seen any Westworld?
I have not seen any Westworld, but I have a very important question for Ty.
Yeah.
Okay. So what is the more important movie that is set in fictional Detroit? True Romance?
Oh, no. Here we go. I love
True
this.
True Romance or RoboCop?
RoboCop.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
Eat it, Mike. Eat shit, Mike.
I don't have to say anything. Ty, go ahead and explain your point.
Yeah, no. RoboCop, because... And I didn't see the reboot, because, like, the first review
You aren't missing anything.
The first review I saw totally encapsulated this. They're like, okay, look, like... And I think it was, like, a Grantland review. It was really good. I forget who wrote it, but it was, like, okay, the first RoboCop was, like, a Jeremiah of, like... Okay, like, I mean, and stuff that's even come to, like, oh, the Wall Street brokers are all at the urinals, watch, and there's a stock ticker over the urinals. Yes, that's supposed to be funny, like, that would never happen. And, like, I mean, I check Twitter at the, I mean, I'm just saying, like, we're all, you know, like, we are living in that reality. And, like,
the Pulverhoven universe,
we totally are. And so that was this whole social commentary that still really resonates. And RoboCop, the reboot just kind of took, well, like, okay, the idea of RoboCop, it's a robot cop, cool, like, let's just have a robot cop shoot people. And I'm like, no, yeah.
And yeah, Mike, don't tell me about True Romance ever again.
Yeah, don't at me about True Romance. It's a fine movie, but come on.
It's RoboCop.
You said important.
Right.
And there's no question about that.
No.
No, it was one of the most important movies out there. I do have one theory about the Man in Black. I think he is...
John Cena!
We always smash cut out our podcast to the John Cena meme.
Okay. All right. I was just like, what?
So how that's gonna sound like the Man in Black is John Cena.
Check the injury report.